Hello, this is Tom Campbell. Today is April 7, 2019, and I'm talking with Tom Murray from The Litter. Tom, what is your full name and your date of birth, please, and your hometown?
Well, it's Thomas Allen Murray. I was born in 1948. I was born in Cleveland, went to Milwaukee, and then we finally got to Minnesota when I was in, I think, seventh or eighth grade.
What part of Minnesota did you wind up in?
Edina.
Is that where you went to high school?
Mm-hmm.
When did you start playing drums?
I started when I was 7 years old. My parents, well, my mom, my real dad died when I was a year old, so I was adopted with the name Murray. And my mom said I had to take an instrument, and but I could pick whatever I wanted. So I tried guitar, and that didn't work. Then I tried piano, and that was a little boring for me. And my childhood was pretty frustrating. And so I started hitting drums, and I went, oh, this is fun. I can get my anger instead of hitting a wall, you know, getting mad, I could hit the crap out of my drums, you know. I played one snare drum. My mom bought me a snare drum, and I played that for almost 2 years.
When did you get a full kit for the first time?
For Christmas, about 2 years when I started.
What kind of drum kit was it?
It was a Ludwig.
Where did it come from? Local store?
I don't know where they bought it. It was a Christmas present. So I woke up, and there was the kit.
You got it from Santa.
Yeah. Santa, yes.
Santa. There you go.
Now, I understand you actually went on tour to Canada with the Castaways.
Yeah. That summer before I joined The Litter, I went up there. I was in a couple of bands called The Bunch. That was my first band I was in. And then I got offered the Canadian tour, and it brought us all the way up to this place, a little town almost near Alaska, was called Flin Flon, Canada. And but that was my first experience of, and I was around 16 years old when that happened.
This was in the summer then, so you weren't in school.
No, it was summer. And I remember one story that was really fun. We played, one of the first dates was Winnipeg, and we played the gig, and they asked us to come to a house, a party after the show, and I was talking to the owner of the house, and on the wall there was, like, you know, grandma picture on the wall, and I went, oh, is that your grandma? And he said, no, that's the Queen of England. True.
Who was in that version of the Castaways?
I believe it was Dick Robey.
Bill Swanson. On keyboards.
There were two original members, I believe. That was probably it.
So Jim Donna was not on that tour?
No,
he was. Denny Craswell was not?
No.
Okay. And so that's your first time on the road with a band?
Mm-hmm.
What was the experience like for you?
Well, we pulled a trailer, and so we could sleep in it. Halfway through the tour, the car blew up, the engine motor blew up, and I remember it was coming back home on a train. That's how we got back.
Well, the car stayed in Canada. Didn't work, huh?
I just went, time to go home, you know. But it was like, it blew up right near, you know, right around the end. And I think we were going back home at the time. Mm-hmm. And then it blew up. And so that was my experience of taking the train home from Canada.
So that would have been the summer of 65, correct?
Right.
So then you go to your senior year in Edina, 1966. What?
Who was in the bunch?
I can't remember.
Oh, you can't remember.
Oh, the bunch. No. Yeah. I was so local. Did they play live or?
Yeah, we did some gigs.
Oh, okay.
And but I don't remember who it was. It was like,
okay.
okay, let's try this. See if, you know.
So what do you recall about Edina High School in your senior year?
I was really kind of more like a James Dean. Everyone in Edina, you know, it's the fashion was wingtips, Gantt shirts. Everyone had GTO was the big car, you know, and so I had a motorcycle, and so I would drive my motorcycle to school, and I believe it was the only one. But I wore Italian shoes, real tight pants, and the girls liked me because I was the last because all the rest of the guys looked normal, you know.
You were a rebel.
I was a rebel. Yeah.
A James Dean rebel.
Yeah, but I was young, cute, and naive about, you know. That's when I met Dan Rinaldi.
Where did you meet Dan?
That summer I went to the state fair.
Let me ask you something before that. Were you going out to see local bands in your senior year of high school?
Yeah, I remember seeing the Underbeats.
Like at a local club, Mr. Lucky's or something like that?
I think it was more like, it was out in, I think it was in Shakopee, but they were playing, and I thought they were great. Yeah. And so I got to see the bands that were happening at the time. I believe I saw the Del Counts. I think they were around at that time. So whatever the bands of the hour at the time, it's, yeah, I went and saw what was happening now at the bands.
Now, I understand you actually saw Gene Krupa perform live, right?
Well, I went to a seminar. My mom brought me to a seminar, his seminar, and I got to play for him. And I was right around 13, 14 at the time, and I started when I was around 7. And I practiced for hours and hours every day, like 5, 6, 7 hours a day. That's all I did, and I think I drove my mom to be neurotic, you know, because it was an acoustic set, of course, you know. And I played all the time, and then Gene was in town, and my mom brought me to him, and I played for him, and he put his arm around me and looked at me, and he said, "God gave you a great talent." And he said, "Keep going." And he says, "I'm going to be in town for a while. Would you like to hang around with me?" And I said, "Absolutely," because I am. It was Gene Krupa and Sandy Nelson were the drummers that I was listening to. And so it's I like Gene's tom work, and so I really concentrated on he was a tom man, you know, big time, and he gave me some advice. And he showed me some things, and there were two things that he said to me that I did my whole career. The first one was, he said, whenever you play, whenever you're in front of an audience, he goes, go to a mirror before and look at yourself and go, this could be the last time I ever do this. And I did that my whole career. And that made me consistent. You know, because I thought about it before I went and played, that this could be it. And it worked, you know. And over the years, of the people that I've worked with, I've always said that to them, you know, the bands that I put together and all that. If you take it that level, your performances every night are right.
Let's talk about the state fair. The band stand that they had for B-Sharp Music in late August, early September 1966.
I just came back from the Castaways, that tour, and I went to B-Sharp, and I can't remember who it was, but someone challenged me to do an hour drum solo.
That sounds like Jim Lopez, the owner of the store.
It could have been, but I can't remember who it was. And I said, I'll take out, and he offered me like $100. He said, I'll give you $100 if you can do an hour solo. And that was a breeze for me, you know.
So you took on the challenge, and you played a whole hour.
Yeah, I just banged it out for a whole hour, and Jim Kane was there, Danny White was there, Dan Rinaldi was there, and Bill Stranloff were there, and they were in two different bands.
The Victors and the Tabs.
Right.
And they saw you play.
Yeah, and they came up to me after that and said, you want to be in our band? And immediately I said, yeah, I'll do that. That was, because the Castaway was just a temporary, just go to Canada and, you know.
Did their band have a name yet at that time or not?
No.
Where did they practice, the new band?
At Jim Kane's house.
Out in Excelsior?
Yeah.
In the basement?
Yeah.
Okay. Who came up with the name The Litter?
I think Stranloff.
Okay.
You know, I'm not sure on that, but I didn't, you know.
Zippy thinks it was Jim Kane, but, you know, it's not a big deal. What kind of songs were the Litter practicing right off the bat there?
Jim had a great idea. He had a friend in England that would send him the new releases of artists in England. One of them was the Cream, of course, and I remember that. So we would learn those songs Litter way. We would just, you know, do it our own way. And most of the people thought they were our songs because they weren't released in the United States yet.
So that would include a lot of songs by the Yardbirds and The Who,
mm-hmm.
bands like that.
And that's how it got, because most of the people didn't know most of these songs because they weren't released here yet. And I thought that was a great idea until we started to write our own.
Do you remember the first public job with The Litter?
No.
Okay.
I know that there were a lot of them, and the people loved us, and especially the girls, because we were all cute and talented. And it got to be where there were so many girls in front of us that their boyfriends got really mad at us for doing it, and we had to have police escorts out of town a lot because the guys wanted to beat us up. But the guys that weren't with girls, you know, they rocked with us. But
you had long hair by this time?
Started to, you know,
following the lead.
They all had long hair except me. I was the one that just got. I was still going to high school when my senior year is. I got in a Litter.
So it seems like Stranloff and Rinaldi were the first two guys who really had long hair in town.
And Kane had long hair, too.
Kane, too.
Yeah.
Okay.
And Denny had he was like Peter Noon. He was cute. And, you know, he had the Peter Noon vibe, you know.
Now, at some point, you run into Warren Kendrick.
Yes.
Record producer and songwriter. How did he come to get in touch with you guys?
Jim Kane did get all the business of the band, and I was just interested in playing drums and, you know, talking to girls. Yeah.
Did Warren Kendrick play you a tape of Action Woman, or did he play it live on guitar or piano or sing it, or how did that come about?
I don't remember.
Okay.
On that is all I know is when we started to work on the song, and then we went in the studio and did it.
And that was Dove Recording in Bloomington?
Yeah.
And it's Stranloff who comes up with the screeching, distorted feedback sound at the beginning, correct?
Correct.
Okay.
That was Bill. That was his signature lick.
Had other bands been using that type of distortion sound on their guitars at that time or not?
No, we had our own sound. I mean, we were punky, we were garage, And I feel that, you know, we were the grandfathers of garage and punk,
mm-hmm.
at least in the cities here. And but we were one of the first bands to use phasing. We had a Mellotron synthesizer on it was just a blur. I think it was the second album we did. It was just a Moog synthesizer, and it was just kind of just sounds that we did on that one.
Okay, so early 1967, your 45 comes out with Action Woman. Do you recall the very first time you heard it on the radio?
Yeah, absolutely.
Let's hear.
I was with my mom again. You know, my mom was behind me completely. She wanted me to do this because, you know, I loved it so much. And we were driving down the street, and we were right around Hennepin, and it came on. And I went, "Mom, that's me," you know. And I'll always remember, it was like, wow, like, this is so cool, yeah. And that's when I kind of went, yeah, I might be a rock star now.
How did that affect the band, having a local hit song?
Oh, we were drawing big time. I mean, it was, we were the band of the hour. And no one, I mean, the other groups like Still Rovin, they were more in the Paisleys. They were more the getting into the hippie kind of stuff. And we were more into the rebel, you know, the more pounded out rock and roll.
Now, I noticed on a couple flyers I was able to come across that when you played at Reggie's Danceland in Excelsior,
mm-hmm.
you were billed as the Psychedelic Litter.
Yeah.
Is that a good title for the band, the Psychedelic
yeah.
Litter?
We were psychedelic in certain tunes that we did. I'm a Man was one. And that would just feedback, and you know, and as the band evolved into who we were, we weren't copying anybody. You know, it was what was coming out of us. That's what I liked about it.
Did you have a favorite spot in town to play, like Reggie's Danceland or one of the ballrooms or one of the teen clubs?
No, I look forward to every place we played. You know.
So when you played a ballroom, like, well, the Marigold, or did you play the prom center?
Yeah, we did.
How many kids would show up for a gig to see the Litter?
We would fill the room.
Thousands? I mean, over 1,000?
It was pretty much wherever we went, it was full. You know, it only took us maybe, Strandloff was in the band for about 6 months.
Right.
That's when Zippy came in.
Mm-hmm.
But the first 6 months were the building, and then when Action Woman came out, that's when it really exploded for us.
Let's talk about Strandloff's last night with the band down in Rochester when he was apparently a little angry with things. What happened?
I always just observed a lot. I was pretty quiet, you know, and... I remember that Strandloff had a major tantrum. I mean, he was mad, and he threw his amp off the stage. He kicked everything off the stage and went, you know, basically, fuck you guys, and left.
Was it a difference over the direction, the musical direction of the band, do you think?
I think him, that was another one. That was Ray Molina.
Bill was a harmony person. He liked harmonies and stuff like that in bands. And I would say it would probably be a musical direction why he got upset.
It was probably that. Where I was at is I just hung around musicians. I was a drummer, so I was kind of, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
You know, and I just keep the beat for him. And I really wasn't involved at that time, the real early Litter, on any direction we were going. It would just, I'd hear the song, and then I would just do it my style.
And Tom Kaplan, Zippy, happened to be there that night watching, and he joined the band that very night, right?
I believe so, yeah. We gave him like, you know, 12 hours, 20 hours to learn the stuff, and because we had a gig, you know, the next day. And but he recorded the rest. I think we had only, I think, two songs I recorded. I think it was Soul Searching and Action Woman. And I think Zippy did the rest of the songs. He finishes the album.
I think there might have been one more. I think A Legal Matter.
Oh, yeah.
So do you recall the three songs that Bill Stranloff played lead guitar on for the recordings?
Yeah, it was Action Woman, Legal Matter, and Soul Searching.
And Action Woman and Soul Searching, both written by Warren Kendrick.
That's right. He had a gift to write music. Yeah.
So when the album comes out later in that year, 1967, what happened to the band when the album came out?
We started going to Chicago a lot. We started traveling more out of the city. And we were picking up some other specialty. I remember I think that was the part where we went down to Amarillo, Texas.
Tom, could you read through the list of the songs on the first album and say who the writer was and anything you recall about those songs?
Well, of course, Action Woman. That was Warren Kendrick. He wrote that one. Then What You Gonna Do About It? Small Faces wrote it. And I have a story about that right now for the current as today. Codeine, that was Buffy St. Marie. Somebody Help Me, it was a Spencer Davis group. Substitute, The Who. The Mummy, it was our own, and it was Zippy and Bernie Bomberg. I wrote that one. I'm So Glad, Cream. Legal Matter, The Yardbirds. Rack My Mind, The Yardbirds. Soul Searching was Warren Kendrick.
So you have a story about the Small Faces song?
Yeah, just recently, last Sunday, the song What You Gonna Do About It was on America's Funniest Videos.
Funniest Videos?
America's Funniest Videos.
Oh, on for background music?
On ABC, yeah. They showed videos of animals and doing funny things. And so they aired that last Sunday, the 31st. And so the Litter brand keeps going and going. But we were also on episode of Californication, the movie Beginners, and, of course, Medium Cool, you know, in the old days.
Okay, now at this time, is Warren Kendrick also managing the Litter?
That's a good question.
Okay.
Because, again, I wasn't involved in all that at all.
So okay, that's all right. We'll just drop that.
Okay.
Call Jim Keane. He'll tell you.
Yeah. Right. Whose idea was it to go to Chicago and play live?
Probably Jim Keane.
Okay.
Yeah, he was the one that did all the business for the band.
And you wind up playing quite a bit at the Electric Theater, which changed names to Kinetic Playground. What do you recall about the Electric Theater in Chicago?
It was great. It got to be after, I believe we had different management at that time. I think Scott Dineen was our manager. And then the owner was Aaron Russo, which he was with Bette Midler at the time. And he also discovered Eddie Murphy. He was the executive producer for Trading Places was the first one. And Aaron, a great guy. We could go into the theater, you know, anytime we wanted, go backstage, whoever was there. And just countless number of people played it. And but the show that was the best for me was it was Led Zeppelin, Savoy Brown, Jethro Tull, and the Litter. It was a 2000 sit on the floor venue.
Was this at the Electric Theater?
Yeah, they call it Kinetic Playground too.
At that point,
after that, yeah, and there were 2000 inside and 20,000 outside that couldn't get in. And they were kind of riding in a way and kind of upset that they couldn't get in. And that was the weekend that was the most special moment of my whole career, that I jammed with John Bonham. And eventually all the drummers, and the next afternoon, and then all the band members came in, and we had this huge jam on stage with all four bands. It was pretty cool.
Now, the Lair got into using strobe lights and light shows at this point too, right? Or was that earlier?
That was earlier. When we first started going to Chicago, we were playing Old Town area. That's where we started. And there was a real scene there. We made our own strobe lights. You know, we were one of the first to have strobe lights. And it was a box that we did, and put a big bright light in it, and do a thing that would, you know, turn around and it would have the light. So that was the first strobe lights we did. And they kind of worked, so it was kind of cool. We were into, you know, the latest of what we could do for lighting. And, you know, I mean, I think that the mirrored balls were, you know, yeah. started then too, you know.
Now, were you being booked by Central Booking out of Minneapolis, or?
Yeah, I believe so. Yeah, Central did a lot of.
What were the name of the clubs in Chicago in
Old Town? That's a tough one. I can't remember.
Chicago Amphitheater was there.
There was up something and down something. Up something and down. You talk about Old Town.
Yeah, Old Town.
Old Town had a few clubs.
Oh, yeah. And they were really cool.